accent format and that's good to be.
So, I mean, I'm sticking with the video or
this is like the television shows where they keep the, you only see the profile of the person doing it to protect their anonymity.
So are you saying that you cannot actually see Jorge's...
They can see... They think this is too bright, so they cannot see me.
Oh, I see.
It's fine.
It has to go in here.
Does anyone need paper to take
off? I mean, it's fine. I'm making a joke. I'm not...
It's fine.
I mean, it's real. I'm describing the truth, but it's not get in the way of what you need to do here.
Okay, so I think the people here are ready to start, so let us know when you are ready and we can get started.
Okay, let me just quickly figure out how to do it.
You
guys have the answer.
We do.
All right, I'll jump up.
You said it was okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, so time?
Yeah, I can time.
Yeah, we also have the time over there.
Okay.
Okay, so I am Jorge Guerra. I'm going to present cost-effective storage using STEM-based dynamic theory. This work is done in collaboration with Himavinda Pucha, Joseph Glider, and Wendy Bellumini from IBM, and my advisor, Raju Rangaswamy from FAU. So let me start by mentioning that enterprise storage systems strive to provide performance and reliability while minimizing capital costs. However, we know that there's chance for improvement since most storage systems currently are single tier, that is typically composed of SAS and SAS fiber channel arrays, and static, that data stays in the same place where it's initially reading. We have identified two areas where we can improve. One is using dynamic multi-tiered systems, and the other one is improving the provisioning techniques. So let me just show you an example of two systems. The first one is a single-tier system that uses six SAS arrays, and another multi-tiered system that uses two SAS arrays, one SSD and one SATA. And we run it through a workload for 6 hours. The workload pattern is observed in the above graph, and the below graph you see the power through time. And in this particular example, we were able to achieve 30% lower cost, 50% lower energy, and 60% better performance. Right? So this shows us that multi-tier has some potentials, but it's still a little bit tricky to design, right? So in order to take advantage of those potential benefits from multi-tier, one has to go and design storage that are efficient. And for that, we have to leverage the different benefits of different devices. For instance, we know that SATA is good for idle data because it has a very good capacity. SAS are good for sequential accesses because of its bandwidth, and SSDs are good for workloads with high amount of random IOPS. So the question we ask is, can we decrease capital and operational costs by using different types of disks and leveraging their benefits? And we believe we can. However, we have to focus on a few things, and the first one is that in order to serve for primary storage, we have some key requirements that we need to be able to address. The first one is that data needs to be always online. We cannot tolerate spin-up latency. Second one is that performance requirements always need to be satisfied, right? And it's also important to note that some multi-tier solutions are already on the market by several vendors, some of which I named here, which claim to have performance and cost savings. Performance gains and cost savings. However, we have found that there are two issues that remain to address. The first one is the lack of a configuration tool to determine which mix of devices will perform well for a given customer workload that he has observed during time. And also, there are no published work on generic algorithms to place data on different tiers as the workload changes. For this, we have come up with a solution using two key ideas. The first one is tiering, and the second one is consolidation. In tiering, we basically want to put data on the place where it's most efficient. And this will provide us some energy efficiency benefits, as well as a better performance. In consolidation, we want to take those disks that are not being used and basically turn them off and put data into the smallest possible reduced set of disks so we can have the maximum number of disks turned off and thus save energy. Right? So it's not that easy. There are some challenges that we need to address. First, we need algorithms to perform efficient data placement. We need to have a low overhead data migration algorithms and techniques so that our dynamic adaptation to a workload can perform well. And finally, and most importantly, we need to guarantee that performance requirements are always satisfied. There are some design choices that we need to make. In terms of our system, the extent granularity, that is, at which granularity do we move data from one tier to another, how do we place data on different tiers, So this is an outline of my talk. I have gone through the motivation. I will continue to present the architecture. Then I will go into the evaluation and finish with some insights. Okay, so our system looks like this. The current storage system looks like this. We have many applications talking to a centralized volume server that has a SAS backend. What we want to do is that we want to plug in some modules to get some statistics, which will communicate to some configuration advisor that we create, which will output a configuration here that advise. Then some human will go and buy and install that configuration, and then we will have a new storage system provisioned to fit the demands of the workload that we have observed through time. And on top of that, we will additionally add our dynamic tier manager to do all the performance and energy dynamic optimizations on the fly. Those two, like I said, are the components that our work has been based on and which we're all able to describe today, starting by the configuration advisor, which looks something like this. Like I said, we plug in a module to obtain some data statistics. That goes to our resource consumption model and to our configuration algorithm. The goal of this, of the configuration advisor, is to produce a configuration that is a multi-tier, cost-effective configuration that is able to save capital costs and, in the future, operational costs. The first component of the advisor is a data collector, and it maintains extending level I information. For every extent, it basically has two groups of data, the bandwidth and its random IOPS, which are summarized in a minute basis and given to an exponential moving average function just like this one. So it gives basically more weight to more recent activity. Right? Before I go into how we actually do our provisioning, I want to mention, go into a little background and talk about how current provisioning schemes work. So the way they work is that if we see a workload through time, typically a vendor will go and provision for the peak observed, the peak workload that has been observed. And in this case, let's say it's 10 stacks. However, these can lead to over-provisioning because using only IOPS will not be enough because, for instance, we see that sequential work SAS disks are very good for sequential workloads. And as I put down here, one SAS disk can serve 300 random IOPS or 1,000 sequential IOPS. And also that just taking into account this illustrates that taking into account IOPS is not sufficient, that we need more information. However, if not IOPS, then what other metrics do we do? So how much resources does an extend use of from a particular device given its capacity, bandwidth, and IOPS? And the way we go and model this is just going into the basics, looking at how this works, right? So if we all remember, these are very simple. So if we look at this this disk that wants to serve this IO request represented in blue, there's a seek time. Then there is also a rotational delay, which is the time it takes for the head to be placed over the data. And then finally, there's a transfer time. So basically, the time to service an IO is given by those three factors, which we put on there. And if we want to generalize it to a given to any set of number of IOs and amount of data, we just simply obtain the formula above. In that table, I present some of the seek, rotational, and transfer times for some typical SATA, SAS, and SSD drives. I present two example extend IO patterns. The first one has 10 IOPS at 4 kilobytes, and we see that clearly the SSD outperforms in our utilization metric and is the best option. However, for extends that have high, high degree of sequentiality, we see that SAS will outperform the SSD. Right? So in this graph, I give you basically which device gives you the lowest cost per tier, right? So if the way we interpret this graph is that if we have low sequentiality and low IOPS, that is the best option, that is for idle data. And if we have high IOPS, SSD starts becoming the best option. However, as the sequentiality increases, we see that other tiers are also important, and thus back our argument that other types of devices are sometimes better for sequential workloads. Okay, so given that that model into account, then we basically plug it in to our resource consumption model, which gives us an estimate of how much resources we have. So in this example, we have 4 extents, and we go on to calculate the utilization per extent as the maximum IO time between the IO time and the capacity it uses, right? So it would be something like this, and right? And then we take the minimum of those utilizations and say that, okay, so this will be the number of drives that we need. In this case, we can see that we need one SATA, two SAT, and one SSD. And then we basically want to repeat this for all the time intervals that we have. So after we repeat it for all the time intervals that we have, we basically want to look at the maximum amount of drives that we use at every time interval. And that will be the outcome of our provisioning scheme, right? In this case, we can see that the maximum is two SAS, as given in this first time, two SATA as used in both these two times, and one SSD as used in this case. Okay, so after the person has gone and bought the system and installed it, we go and install our Dynamic Tier Manager, which is also collecting data and dynamically optimizing the system to improve performance and save energy at the same time. And the way we go on and do this is basically we have the same data collector that we used before to collect the statistics. It will plug it into the resource consumption model, and that will come out with some layout which will pass to a migrator. Or if we detect throttling, which I will go into further details in a minute, it can also give a different layout to the migrator to do. Okay, so how do we come up with our layout in this case? So the first thing we got to do is grant the extents. So in this case, we have four extents. They have a different value, and thus we assign a different tier, right? And then in the next step, we see that actually we don't need two SATA, we just need one, and that the workload of the SAT can be absorbed by the SSD, so we only end up using two disks instead of four that we had initially. Notice that there is no actual data movement until this is given to the migrator. Okay, so the other point I wanted to say is that an extensive map can possibly change, and when that happens, we want to make sure that we don't violate performance requirements. And for this, we have a throttling detector and corrector, which sees that. That let's say at some point we have this extent this in SAT, and it has a low IOPS, so it's very cold. And we decide that okay, this guy is not doing any much stuff, so we want to move it to SATA. And however, after we put it on SATA, we look that it's increasingly becoming hot, so we end up having an array that is throttled. And we don't want to have that. So what we do then is that we load balance this hot extent among the other arrays that are not throttled. And in this case, what we want to do is that we want to move this to the SSD so that the extent becomes cold, so that array can support the work again, and the SATA becomes cold. Right? Okay. So the migrator will be responsible for doing all the extent movement between arrays, and it only allows one migration to go on at a time, and it will pace the migration depending on how much foreground activity it's going on. Okay, so now let's go on to the evaluation. We implemented this system on Linux. It looks, and the way that we did it is that we have applications issuing IOs to a serial device driver through a device that we created. That guy passes the IOs to an IO dispatcher that we have on user level, and that communicates with our dynamic tier manager, which will issue the request. Okay, so these are the characteristics for the drive that we use. More details on that is in the paper. I invite you all to read. And our test bed is composed of a quad core Intel and with at 3 GHz with 4 megabytes of RAM, 12 1 terabyte SATA disk, 15K SAT. Both of those connected using a SAT interface and four 180 EV Intel SSDs. And to measure power, we use a WhatsApp power meter. Okay, so we tried four different configurations in total. The first one is a SAS configuration, which we initially performed the load balancing statically at a volume level. The second one, if we were to do the tiering phase only using IOPS, The third one is using our technique, but just the placement is done initially and it's not updated as time goes on. And the last one is our technique, doing all the changes dynamically based on eBox. There are two main parameters that we need to tune our system for, and the first one is extent size. So it's important to know that smaller extents are usually provide higher efficiency, however they require more metadata to keep up with them. Larger extents have lower efficiency, you have more data to migrate, but they have less metadata, and we for the results shown here, we assume a metadata overhead of a very low metadata overhead of 0.0001 of the storage capacity that we have, and that led us to use a small extent of 64 megabytes. Regarding the epoch duration, it's also important to know that short epochs are more efficient and provide quicker response to, can allow quicker response to changes in the workload. However, more data is migrated and potentially that benefit can be outfitted by the migration overhead. And the large epochs can potentially miss some opportunities because you didn't do the change you needed to do at a time. However, you have a lower migration overhead because you're not migrating data back and forth all the time. And in our case, we assume a 10% of the time, of the total time for migration, which lead us to have a 30-minute migration. And the first experiment, the first result I want to present is based on traits collected from Microsoft Cambridge. It's composed of 36 volumes from 13 servers and using a total of 179 disks. And it has a full big range of different workloads. Here are the volumes that we use for different data sets and the capacities of those data sets. So I'm going to focus today on the combined traits, which is that we took 31 of the most active volumes and put them together, and we end up with two configurations. So the first one is equal performance. So that means this will be the provisioning outcome if I want my multi-tier system to match an OSAS system. And here we see that the OSAS system costs about almost double of the multi-tier dynamic systems. But we also wanted to see what would happen if we wanted equal cost. So if we wanted equal cost, we ended up with this other configuration, which basically bump up the multi-tier. It's just a bump up of the multi-tier configuration. Due to hardware constraints, we were only able to do tests with this equal cost configuration. However, we do have tests for equal performance configuration for the sub data set in this composed from the same Cambridge traits, which are in the paper. Okay, so we ran this for 1 hour period for all of the different configurations that I explained. Here I present how the total IOPS looks like, divided by total and random activity on black, and the power consumption of all the different configurations. So we know that during the period of highest total IOPS, EDT power usage scales better, as we see here, in comparison while the SAS, IST, and EST remain fairly constant, like we see for these other lines. But also, when the IOPS demands decrease, we're also able to scale back our system and provides power saving, right? So we were able to, in summary, EDT was able to provide the highest power saving in comparison to SAS from all the schemes that we tried. But more importantly, in terms of response time, we see that EDT also provides the best average response time. The best average response time by a factor of two by a factor of almost two in the case of average, and by almost three in the 95% percentile. And why the reason that the we see this improvement is that if we look at if we compare it to IDT, which is the IOPS-based scheme, we see that the IOPS-based scheme is more aggressive on putting things on the SSD, right? So in the case of the upper one, we see that the IOPS goes up in this period and then suddenly goes down and stays more or less stable. And for all that time, the EDT placed it on the IOPS tier, whereas EDT, which is our scheme, moved it among different tiers at different times as the IOPS scales back and up again. This is more accentuated in this other example, which basically we see where we see also a similar behavior for this other expense. So in conclusion, IDT was able to place expense better in the more adequate tier. Another set of results is composed of the server traces, which are the HM, MDS, VRN, proxy, SPG, TS, and other volumes. Here, we're able to see that IDT is the one that provides the most energy saving, static energy saving, but EDT provides the lowest cost. And when we look at the workload, we see that and look at the placement of the expense for EDT, we see that during the period of highest activity, and which coincidentally means that it's mostly random. It has some substantial sequential activity. A lot of expense are placed on SAS. And not many are placed on the SSD. And as load decreases, stuff is migrated from the SAS to different tiers, especially to the SATA tier, because some more expense became idle. So this leads EDT to save 50% more energy than SAS. And 25% more than EDT. And also, in terms of performance, we see that EDT significantly outperforms both the IOPS-only scheme and the SAS by 60 and 45% respectively. So this is a summary of results, which is not complete, but I hope you forgive me. So some insights into our system is that we found that accounting for sequential activity is important, but it's not enough. So that accounting for sequentiality is important and needs to be taken into account when choosing tier, and that it's very important to have migration optimization and throttling and have that migration being paced as we move on extent from one tier to another, and that throttling correction is something that is very important to have for the reasons that I previously stated. Right, so with this I conclude, and if you have any questions, comments, and that's it. 28 minutes.
That's good. Okay, so we can open up for feedback now. Bindu, Jyoti, do you have comments for Jorge? Maybe we can start with some high-level comments and then this. Wendy, could you possibly come closer to the to where the microphone is?
Is that better?
Yes.
Yes.
I think it needs a more clear motivation of what they're trying to accomplish at the beginning.
Okay.
We start off and we show some graphs and stuff, but you don't ever really say, okay, we have this new capability to put together a care system, and this is what we're going to try to accomplish with that capability. And it just sort of jumps right into all of these algorithms and stuff. And if I didn't know what this was about, I would be sort of confused by the end about why did they do this.
Yeah, in fact, that's also I have the same high-level comments. But I think the motivation, like, I think there are some points that need to be fleshed out more, and the contributions need to come out sooner. I think
yeah.
The design is solid, the level is solid.
That's just fine. The explanation of how it works is fine. It'll probably need to be shorter.
Then we add motivation.
But I think it really got lost what the purpose of this work was.
I also agree with that. I think Jorge was trying to fit quite a bit in 25 minutes, which I think is not realistic at all. So we had to figure out what we can eliminate, and so that you can be more relaxed while you're presenting.
So 25 plus 5 or
28? 25 plus 5.
Yeah, so we're already over by about 3 minutes, and you were really rushing through the presentation.
Yeah.
And it would be good if you can present it in a more relaxed fashion. Yeah. So if there are any suggestions for parts of the presentation which perhaps are not that important and we could safely remove, I think that would be great.
Right. Let's do the high level first, and then we'll go to the slides.
It was just another bit on the same. Actually, that was really the only comment I had was that the way you explained the motivation may have left open, and you kind of closed the door on the next slide, but you kind of opened the door of saying we wanted to see what it would. You know, I'm trying to remember, but I think that we weren't trying to find out whether. Yeah, let's see. So the point I was thinking of is that there are other vendors doing this. They're claiming that they're claiming performance cost savings, but there's no evidence behind it. So. I think our motivation was not to see whether there could be cost savings, but was to establish it for a fact with some real evidence, rather than just take it as for marketing literature. So if that could somehow prove what you say there, that would probably be good. But I think the real thing is we need to find what. Does not need to be what doesn't need to be talked about here.
At the top of my head, I think the resource consumption model part of it. You also got in the review saying, "Well, this is all very intuitive kind of thing." So that could be a chunk where you could chop off a little bit, or even go, you know, don't animate it to the extent of showing every component. Kind of give a high level idea and move very quickly through that. So the resource consumption piece, both for the DA and the DTM, there was one. That could be shortened, I think. And I think you also spent some time on that.
I think you're talking about the slide with the picture of the disk on it.
It's animation, but...
You could still keep the animation, but not kind of incrementally build it up, kind of let it just go through in one motion and just speak to it. Then
In fact, I don't even know that you need to do that. I think
right.
This is not new and interesting. It's mm-hmm. not really that new, and it's something that can be argued is not. It's the resource consumption model we use because of the type of system we experimented on. But it's not integral to the concepts.
Right.
I think it might be just best to say we used a resource consumption model in order to do our estimations that match the system we were experimenting on.
You can mark it open-ended, right? It can be further improved.
Now that's a different thing. I mean that picture, not that one, but the other one. That's important, I think, to keep in there.
Right. They could be sped up a little bit, or maybe lesser time can be spent on the algorithm. Some of them are quite intuitive once we establish the concept of these consumption models. But yeah, we'll have to experiment. This is the first iteration, so we'll have to experiment with it a little bit and see, and hopefully grab new sets of people. I'll try to invite more people next time we do this, maybe Anna, Joe, Tim, and these people, and see what information.
Somebody that hasn't seen it a bunch of times.
So this is, I think, a good first attempt. Let's discuss a few things, and then we'll have to experiment with it and see. We need to make sure the motivation is not lost. At the same time, people get a high-level idea of the design. We can't present every detail of the design or the model. They'll have to refer to the paper. They'll have to read the paper. But then what we want them to go back with is, you know, these are the problems. We told them this is a high-level approach they went with, and their results seem kind of plausible.
So one high-level comment I had was, you introduced the term epoch in the evaluation, and I think it's important to talk about the fact that there is a time-based shuffling of data in our system, and in fact the configuration advisor uses that capability to come up with the best possible configuration. Right. So
yeah.
I sort of lost that message somehow. Maybe you have it in there somewhere. In the earlier slides.
No, I don't have it in the earlier slides. I think this is the soonest that I introduce some time base.
Right. So here, I think, you sort of went through this saying, okay, we take each time step and choose the number of devices and come up with this. And I think there is a underlying assumption that we are able to move data accordingly,
mm-hmm.
right? And
yeah.
and that, I think, has to be explicit when you're discussing
okay.
this. Otherwise, it's a little confusing as to how you're able to use this method to configure a storage system, right?
Okay.
Are there any other high-level comments?
That was the main thing. We could step through slides and discuss the motivation a little bit, how we can organize it.
How about you guys? I mean, do you have any high level comments?
Now you're moving to have less information about the algorithms and about what things
Right,
so
but that's fine. I think
you're asking for more of that. I'm not sure what a thing is. I'm not sure what a layout is. I don't know what the algorithm is used for provisioning or for replacement or waiting replacement being done. So I would like all those details. So I'm going to get all those details in the presentation or in the paper.
I think.
I feel like I haven't explained very. That's a very low level. I don't like that.
So, let me ask a question. Are you were you sort of lost in the presentation because of the lack of that information?
Yes. I mean, what I'm saying is that you do it good, like explain what an extent is and effort, or not doing it at all.
Right. See, so you're saying that if we do use those terms, you would prefer that they be introduced in a proper formal way.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you are sort of lost.
And also about the algorithm for provisioning, for example. Like, there is some magic going on, but I don't know. I remember you were using some kind of deep Python. Maybe it's okay to mention that.
Well, this was the idea of this life.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why you might have had a hard time understanding is also, I think it's a common reason for some problems, which is the fact that you're now sort of compelled to rush through a lot of the messages in the presentation because of lack of time. And I think we have to really address that in a fundamental sense, to figure out, to go through the presentation again carefully and figure out the things that might appear important, but if they are not necessary for the message making sense, we could afford to discard some of those.
Okay.
And then you can possibly spend a little more time talking about what an extent is and what an epoch is and how are these concepts being used in our system.
There are some slides that I don't think that are necessary. For example, there is one where you spend some time saying what tiering and consolidation are.
Okay.
The ones with the D's. I guess that's stuff that people from past were already involved
with. Tiering, yeah. I think tiering people sort of know, but there are multiple definitions of tiering itself.
Okay.
So to clarify which one we are using in this paper, I think it's, in my opinion, important to talk about that specific definition.
For example, the over-provision implies, right? Mm-hmm. The time you have these fees and you provision for the fees. I mean, that's not necessary. It's just over-provision.
Hmm.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's my thing. I feel that there's too much time spent on these kind of things and not time enough on motivation or the algorithms on the curve.
Right.
Well, yeah. Actually, in this slide, I felt that you struggled a bit explaining. I don't know how, but probably you can simplify or even ignore the slide.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is related to motivating, why tiering is important. And even, I think this is also, like we discussed yesterday, this motivation is not just for tiered systems, but also for a single, if you have a single tier, you still want to pay attention to sequential versus random IO ops when you provision. I think there are two messages there. One is the bringing out the fact that over-provisioning based on IO ops, if you provision based on IO ops, that would over-provision because sequential IOPS is different than random IOPS. I think that's the message that perhaps needs to be highlighted. And I think that was your intention too.
Yes.
For me, the main message of the slide is that existing solutions don't just fit in a dynamic extent, in an extent-based dynamic system. And I think that's the main message or at least in my mind, that needs to get conveyed, or the motivation for something like this, which is, today people just take peak and provision an all that system and that's well and good, but that won't just be extensible into the extent plan or when you have an extent level system. The IOP, I agree that's an important point, but that to almost be, I feel it's more potentially belonging to the design of our CA as opposed to the current, as opposed to a lesson learned from the current provisioning scheme. I mean, we didn't realize it right away, so putting it in this light, even before we design our stuff, is kind of, we are preempting ourselves, I feel, a little bit in terms of the design.
Right, So what you're suggesting seems that maybe this slide is not all that important at all, because it's going into some detail that is more relevant later on in the presentation. Is that
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I have to see a little bit more around it. I remember the slide around it for context, but yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I have many slides where I thought you went way too fast. And I think, you know, because you're trying to make the time, and there were some slides, for instance, 10, 11, where you could have spent a little bit more time because I thought those were important.
Yeah, things that I'm still finding it hard to see what needs to be cut out and what needs to be added.
Right. So I think there are some suggestions coming up now which
yeah.
We can possibly use. Are there any other high-level comments from you guys?
There is a graphic, like a 3D app.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand what the proposal.
Right. Yeah, this one.
That one has
Are you, Bindu, are you able to follow the question and the comments?
No, actually, we were not able to parse.
Yeah, can you come closer a little bit so they can also hear what you're saying?
I was saying that I have not clear what that graphic means and how it is integrated in the presentation.
Mm.
Yes, that's, I think, I will, in fact, one of my suggestions was going to be to replace that with a normalized graph of a dollar per gigabyte and something like that, and maybe even walk through one of the triangles slowly before the other two appear. You know, mark out what the points are before you get all three devices. Yeah, I think I have a few suggestions around this as well. That's a good point. Like over time, as I'm explaining this to folks, I realize that a more intuitive way to motivate tiering is to kind of just throw the numbers comparing dollar per IOPS to dollar per gigabyte, for the energy side, watts per IOPS and watts per gigabyte. Just kind of pointing out that the lowest for a dollar per IOPS is a different device as opposed to the lowest point in dollar per gigabyte and dollar per megabyte per second, I guess, a dollar per bandwidth, kind of immediately convey the motivation that you have to pick different devices if your overall goal is minimizing cost, and similarly for energy.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes, or I found it much easier or much more intuitive to explain it, to extend it that way as opposed to using this figure, which is just a modification of this figure ultimately if you see.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. I don't know, maybe Bindu, you can help out.
I have those.
Yeah, you have those?
Have that information.
Did you put that in the poster, Jorge?
Yes, it's in the poster. No, I have those. Yeah, I have that data. I actually have a slide that has that information.
Okay.
It's actually here, just in the back of slides.
Okay, okay. So, hold on, guys. We are getting kicked out of this conference room. I think I did a bad thing by... Can you guys look up the slide? Like a free tube or...
So what is the DC system is only for individual disk and individual SSDs, but can it work as a separate RAID configuration? And you can see your RAID also, separate RAID configuration?
Yes, that's
Yes. Yeah, so actually, I mean, the way we do it is that when we come up with a configuration, we just configure that as a RAID 0. But you could very well just come up with different schemes, just that the model will be a little bit more complicated, different RAID schemes.
No, what you say is instead of seeing a disk as a single disk, do you have a disk as an array of disks?
Yeah. Is it blank or black box? You treat it as a unique?
Every disk. So per tier, we have different amount of disks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which we group into arrays, and those arrays are the unit of operation that we have.
We got to move offices, guys. So we'll plug back in a moment.
Okay. So So Bindu, just call me when you're ready.
Okay. Okay. In just a couple of minutes.
Yeah, something that has to be clarified.
Yeah,
that's a very good point that you brought up.
I was thinking that each device you were using was actually, I mean, it's obviously, for instance, the ASAP or SSD, but each of those has some characteristics that you are using to take those decisions.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So by having a RAID or some other device that can come up later, I don't know, you just need to add that device and add
those characteristics to your
model, and then it will work fine, right?
Yes.
So it's some kind of black box in some sense.
Well, it's not black box because you know the characteristics of the devices.
Right, but what I'm saying is that if you have some kind of RAID,
mm-hmm.
of some, you know, you can have many variations, right? If you have some kind of RAID, then you just find the characteristics of that RAID
mm-hmm.
and give it as input to your model, and then it should work.
Yes, so for a certain type of RAID, it may be the case that we might need additional parameters in our model.
Yeah.
For instance, write performance.
Yeah.
Be different than read performance.
Right, exactly.
Like
I guess my point is that the model really doesn't care if that's an SSD, but what it cares is
how big
capacity this bandwidth, right?
Yeah,
so
but basically those three parameters that I put on one slide. So
that's what I'm saying. So if you're able to extract that information from a RAID or from some, you know, some other storage system, then it should work.
Well, that's what we do because each of those devices is actually a RAID, right?
Yes.
So we don't, it's not single devices in the actual test bed and evaluation.
The only thing that for me is not clear is the relationship between energy consumption and each one of these types of devices. Because I suppose one kind of device has more or less energy consumption than another one, and making that decision.
And I don't quite understand your question.
That's what she was referring to, Bindu was referring to, if you put like installer for energy or for what of energy or something like that.
Because as I understand, you select, the model selects which device needs to be used. Parting of the capacity or bandwidth or IOPS. But it must be taken into account the energy consumption of the device. So if you put an extend in SSD, it's different than putting on that on the part of the energy consumption.
Mm-hmm. I get where you're going. Okay. So
so I guess your question is, how does the model take into account the energy cost of placing an extend in a specific type of device? So, I think we do take that into account.
Yes. Yes, we do take into account
the energy cost.
So, I mean, to more specifics into the way the model works is that we basically get the utilization, as I explained in one of the slides, that is the maximum of the bio utilization and capacity, and that utilization we multiply it by the energy it uses.
Hello.
You calculate the energy per extent.
Exactly, we calculate the energy per extent, and that's how we place it.
If you place that extent in that device.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. So basically, we calculate how much energy it will use placed on different devices and. Things that I didn't want to go into that much amount of details of the model.
So, I don't know. This is an idea for this slide. I was thinking based on her idea of the cost, some kind of table where you have the price per bandwidth, per IOPS, or per capacity,
mm-hmm.
right? And you bold those that where each device has some advantage.
Okay.
For instance, in the SSD, you have some advantage in IOPS, then you bold IOPS for that device.
Okay. Right. That seems, which is sort of what this thing is doing, this triangles.
Right.
And yeah, you're saying show it in a table format.
Yeah, concrete numbers.
And actual numbers. Is this with actual numbers on some?
This is with actual numbers.
Yeah. Okay.
This is not 3D. This is like a web, right?
Yeah.
Web. Yeah, it's not 3D.
Look, it's 3D.
Okay. So, any other?
I also have another comment in the evaluation part. I think you rush, but I guess it's the same. You rush too fast. Probably there is too much information in evaluation. So at some point, I just got lost.
I think what needs to happen with the evaluation as well is we have to further summarize the evaluation. We might have to remove some additional charts.
So that you can present one example, probably.
Yes, present one example and state that, or maybe you can summarize the other observations from our, or insights from our evaluation instead of showing all that data.
Yeah, for instance, one I saw, there was these tables that actually you apologize because you didn't have all the numbers.
Yeah.
and then you didn't talk about the tables much. So
yeah,
it was just saying, okay, remove the table.
No, probably what's going to happen is that I'll just stick to one example and present what Raju was saying, and then if someone asks, I'll present a table.
I'll
put it in the back of slides.
Right. So I think you can give the same workload configuration with the, I think you have an equal cost configuration, which you state is the limiting factor.
Mm-hmm.
Because of device availability, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can, for that, you can do performance with the CDF, and you can do the power charts. I think you can possibly safely ignore the extent migration charts.
Okay.
You can just summarize why we see a certain performance or a certain power consumption.
Yeah, but not
just verbally.
Yeah.
And
okay,
in one or two sentences instead of going into the chart itself. That might save
and refer to the page.
Time. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that could possibly be.
And I think I agree with that. So overall, what we need is enough chopping down, enough conciseness so that only gets slowed down. Use your outline chart or some other way of keeping a little bit. You know, break between the design and eval. Break when you, or take a moment to pause and you make an important point on your eval so that people can absorb all of that information. One trick that I use often is repeat my outline slide. Kind of refresh what all you talked about. A couple of really concise bullet points up on there saying, we've motivated by multi-tier works and we've seen how we do PA and TK. Now let's look at, use your outline to, it'll give you a break, it'll give your audience a break, we'll help them recap all they have seen so far and again, put everything in context because people will page in and out of your talk. You cannot hold your attention for 30 minutes solid.
Okay.
So when they come in and out of your talk and they see a sudden slide, they will be lost.
I think one thing that would help too, as you're doing that, is kind of keep bringing it back why doing this thing is going to make your system more efficient or better performing, right? Why is each of the things we're doing going to help you? If we say we're going to consolidate, but we don't have to say why. I mean, it's sort of obvious in a way, but it doesn't keep, you need to keep the emphasis on why each of these techniques is going to be useful.
Right.
At each point where you're going to use a new technique, well, why are we consolidating? We're consolidating to save cost, or we're consolidating to save cost for buying more grass or something.
Right.
Where each time you make a description of the technique that there's a motivation for it, not just right at the beginning, but as you go through the
process. Okay.
And it has to be a story for the why it came up, we're going to figure it out, like,
you're trying to sell this to somebody, you're going to buy a system that does this. And why do they want to buy it? Why is it better? As opposed to more of an analytical approach, and we decided to analyze this thing.
Yeah, and the other thing is, it's not as much about this is what, conveying what we did, but it's more about why we came up with those choices, right? How the story progressed. And that's what, it's just telling that this ABC is what happened, it is not as interesting as figuring out why A led to B and B led to C. And that's the same reason I kind of say that the IOPS discussion, the random sequentiality discussion of provisioning should come later. So the way the story went was, we looked at peak provisioning, that didn't work for us, so we started saying, okay, we need something else, for example. We need a way to look at all the extents together. And as we did that, we said, it's not just enough to do the time thing, we have to also break it down into random and sequential. And that's how the complexity or the solutions work. And
So I get where you're going. So try to make it more like a storyline and then what we, like what I'm presenting right now, right? So it's more like a presentation of a story than of a system.
Right. Otherwise you'll just be stating facts that are not tied up. And so it will, again, be very, people will have questions of why and how did you arrive at this, as opposed to retaining any of that. If you give them why we came, they will retain the insight. So I think that's one suggestion too. Tie things together and again make it more concise. Very concise points of we tried A and then that didn't work, B and then C. And so C is our final result. Something like that.
That makes sense. I think some of these things will happen automatically when you're not as much pressed for time. Right. So when you reduce the set of things that you're going to talk about, you'll automatically start doing what is being suggested by Bindu, which is to tell that story.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. When you pause and you let people sync up with you, you'll automatically be telling it in a story format as opposed to just being in a hurry to flash the next slide and going.
Right.
Give me a second.
Yeah, so let's continue with the comments because I'm recording it and Jorge can listen to them later while he's stepping out for a bit. Are there any other comments from you guys? Any specific comments?
Well, you mentioned something about performance constraints. Are there any actual hard performance constraints that a system has to use?
That's a good question. I think we sort of addressed this in the paper as to what it is we mean when we say that performance requirements are satisfied. And I think that has to be addressed in the presentation. Because all that was mentioned in the presentation was that there is a performance constraint and we had to meet the performance constraint without being more specific.
Your thing is the evaluation, there are different systems to evaluation, IDP, ESP, ESP.
Right.
I didn't know I only know that EDP is the one you are supposing, but I don't know what the other one. I don't think there was any slide.
There was one slide that described each of those configurations, but Jorge was not able to spend sufficient time to describe them.
Okay.
So I think that's once again a side effect of having to rush through the slides.
Okay.
So if he has more time, he should be able to explain better what each of those configurations meant, or each of those solutions meant.
So, I think that potentially a useful way to address that is when you present the first result, build up the graph. Don't have a bulleted list in the previous slide and all the systems at once in the next slide. Build your graph up. So let the audience think through. Okay, you have a static all SAS system. The first thing you do is filtering in. You change one thing at a time. So you have ESP. Then you start doing dynamic stuff.
but you pick what is state-of-the-art IOPS, and the design showed that that is not enough, and then you finally add EDTA. So that way they'll be able to keep up with the actual inputs too. Some things they're adding. Otherwise, the descriptions are on a different page, and the results are on a different page. So there is, you know, there's memory loss again between.
Right. That's a, I think that's a really good advice, which is to present the results for each configuration one at a time, and then so you're not sort of bombarding with all the solutions at the same time.
Right, and you can build up the design choices as well. That would also help.
Right, right, and motivate each subsequent solution based on the shortcomings of the previous one. Okay, that's good. Any other specific comments?
We'll let you guys finish and then we'll take, go around with the Wendy, HOD, and me. So how about you guys finish with specific comments there and then
take work. So I'm also asking the people here about specific comments. I can sort of go into...
I have a couple, I don't know, in slide 10, you mentioned EDT.
Like 10.
In the title, but I don't know. I didn't know what EDT was, so now I know. But is that fine? EDT. So
okay.
Explain the acronym. Yeah, so
I think sometimes you're
confusing
EDTA
and IDTA
too, right?
Yeah.
For me, I'll just use IOPS.
In slide 14, you said that these are simple, but probably people won't agree with that. So.
Which one is simple?
In slide 14, that one. It says, well, these are simple. I mean, that model is simple, but probably people won't agree,
I think we might end up completely chopping this slide. So that problem will go away.
The other thing is that in slide 17, you mentioned two steps. I don't remember what two steps were. Right, the first one needs to do that, and then you mentioned that. Right, so this is two steps to achieve, to give the advice, right, that you are giving. So I was thinking that probably you can give a summary of these two steps very fast, something like, I don't know, first, I don't remember right now, in the presentation makes sense, but in the first step you first, something like you... see what you need in a period of time, and in the second part you put that together and give the, you know, just a small summary.
Okay.
Went probably in detail.
Yeah.
And in slide 29 you mentioned that it's efficient, but it's 29. That's very far. That it's efficient, but it's less, okay, got it, 29. So it's high efficiency, but it has bigger metadata, right? So in terms of efficiency, I mean efficiency in terms of what? Because you have high efficiency in terms of probably IOPS, I don't remember, or granularity in what you are doing, but having bigger metadata means that it's less efficient, right? So. Because now you are using more space.
I think that this slide, again, you ended up spending a lot of time on it. You could possibly just remove, not have the slide, and then introduce extents and epochs earlier, and just in one sentence each describe what is the benefit of or disadvantage of having a larger extent and a larger epoch.
Okay.
At that point. and then you don't have to go through this slide elaborately.
Okay.
This is slide 29. Other specific comments?
Okay, so
maybe you guys can, maybe the folks at IBM can start with the specific comments, and I can go into my specific comments later.
Okay, maybe we should discuss a little bit about the motivation, what we want to see. I mean, I don't have slide specific comments, but maybe like specific section of thoughts. So Jorge, please return to, actually I also have a slide now.
Okay, so you want me to return to motivation, right?
Yep.
Okay.
So what, okay, how many slides do you have for motivation right now?
Well, I have this, let me see, this one, this one, this one, this one. Yeah, up to about here. This is goes more into the solution.
So what's the a good high-level flow for the motivation?
So that there, I mean, there are 7 in total before I present the outline slides.
Right, so these are the current slides that he has.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is a really first thing is slide 3 is probably it's good to have one result, but I would say that almost comes when you're ready to go into much more detail, just kind of a preview.
That's a chair too.
Oh,
that's good.
It's okay, but I think it needs to be more compelling.
Yeah, it needs to be more compelling. Kind of bland.
That's the fact that I get, yeah.
What's the color in red?
Don't you? You got color like
that.
It's informed. So, one thing that I can imagine doing is something like this, which is the first is good. So, we know that the constant, you know, enterprise services will always try to provide performance and reliability at these two things. At this point, I guess, after you say most constants are single tier, before you say anything about what we want to do, it might make sense to introduce what multi-tier systems bring to the table. This chart, spike number 4 needs to come there. And say, there is a new wave of all these, just like, you know, we have in the Tata is entering the enterprise market,
right.
SSDs cost.
Yeah, it is like a chart or maybe an adaptation of this one where you talk about, I mean, you have a situation, that's what's missing, is there's a situation where this is what things are, and now we're going to move to this other thing, and there's no connection there as to why,
yeah.
Or, you know, what would motivate us to move to this other thing, and we need to talk about SATA entering the enterprise, and Flash becoming cheaper, and all these things that are converging to make this a compelling thing to do now,
yeah.
So why didn't we do it 5 years ago, or
right.
Why aren't we going to wait 5 years?
Right, exactly, and that's exactly what I was thinking. After you do the first two things, is this is the continuous struggle or goal of storage in general. This is, like when you think some adaptation of like 4 that says, you know, compare dollar per gigabyte, you know, all these different devices are all viable for the first time or getting viable, and they all provide different sweet spots.
Yeah.
So mixing them all together might be the best way to lower your operating costs or lower your capital costs. So that thinking has to come through as to why we thought coming from what people want to do to multi-tier is a good thing.
I think that's what was really missing from the motivation from the beginning was there was never an explanation of why now and what has changed to make this something worth doing.
Right.
Because people have talked about tiering for a long time, but it's only recently that's really kind of caught on at this level. There's been data migration and archive and that kind of stuff.
Right. But
and that might actually be worth mentioning, too, is that what is the distinction between this and the types of tiering people have done for a long time?
Right. In fact, I was thinking of that. So, after that, I guess we'll see. Okay.
Wendy, can you please move the laptop to closer to where you are?
Right here.
Wow. No, it was like someone like muted the microphone.
Yeah. So suddenly the line went to a much lower volume.
No, when Bindu started speaking, not with Wendy.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's very calm.
And, well, I should probably be blaming Skype and not your laptop.
Not yet. See.
Okay, now it's okay. I think we can hear Jody loud and clear.
The mic is in a tight away from me.
Give her some voice lessons, that's all.
Which way to go the mic?
Where is the mic? Oh, that's why.
That's why you're close to
the mic. Okay.
Speak. Go ahead from the mic.
Where is the microphone?
Tell me, brother.
Okay, well, anyway.
Right, so that's one. And then the second piece that is there is this, right? So the point Jody was making. Now that we have established why multi-tier systems generally are a good idea, and saying that a lot of people are looking at it, what are we doing in this paper? Right? So what Jody was saying before, that needs to come across. People are claiming whatever they're claiming in a bunch of, that's a hard slide. We need to work on it and iterate over it, but if you start putting something together, we can help you. So we need to go from why single to multi-tier, because of all this convergence that's happening between SSE, FAS, and SARA, and all of them being sweet spot for different kind of workloads. And then you have to go into, there's already this big market around multi-tier systems. What are we doing in this paper? So the two unaddressed issues, they need to come out more compelling, in a more compelling fashion. People are talking about cost savings. People are talking about improving performance, but nobody is telling how that is going to happen for any generic customer workload. And emphasize that this might seriously reduce the deployability of these systems. And the next thing being the data placement, which kind of feeds into each other. So that's a complicated argument to make, or a nuanced argument to make, but that needs to come out right after you motivate multi-tier systems. At that point now, you have your state set, right? You have motivated multi-tier systems. You have motivated the role our work will play in this plethora of multi-tier systems that are already there, as you pointed out, from IBM, EMC, NetApp, all these things. So at that point, you can start building up saying, I'm going to address this work focuses on, I think right after that should come the contribution slide, where you will say I don't think tiering and consolidation are the two key ideas of the work. I think the two key ideas or the contributions, as I would say, is addressing these two challenges by going towards the CA and the DTM components. And under that, there is tiering and consolidation as a technique. But that, I would say, is the flow at least that I can think of top of my head. And then at some point when you... So
Bindu, I think that's a very good point. So you're saying that tiering and consolidation is not the high-level bullet, but it is actually the configuration advisor and the DTM. And then
right.
Tiering and consolidation is just one way to implement the DTM at least.
Right. So tiering we already motivated, right? So going from single to just multi-tier system, we already motivated tiering. And once again, given that the next slide says several commercial multi-tier systems exist already, I don't think that's a key insight or a key idea.
Right.
I would say our contributions revolve around these two unaddressed issues, lack of tools and lack of data generic data placement algorithms, and how to design systems and quantify these benefits, right, as opposed to one-off benchmarks that are publicized by these vendors. So that point needs to come across, saying this is the role our work is going to play. So, yeah, at least that's how I'm thinking, that the main contributions are coming from addressing these challenges as opposed opposed to tiering and consolidation.
Right. Okay, so once again, what are the challenges specifically? I sort of lost that part.
This is slide 5. We said there are two unaddressed issues.
Oh, I see. These two. Okay.
And then that will help build the rest of the talk. So if these are the unaddressed issues, that's the focus of our paper. So what we do is address the first using CA, address the second using DDF, and the interaction between them, and then the evaluation. So that slide 5 should lead into the contribution. There will be sub-contributions of the main thing, or insights, which is consolidation is an insight, random sequentiality is an insight, but I would say that those are the high-level contributions that we have.
Yeah, in fact, I would, one suggestion I had was, there was one slide where you talked about, okay, how can we, okay, the configuration tells us that we need one SAS and one SSD or something like that, but in the end we ended up only with one SSD because it could absorb the load of the recommended SAS or something like that. And so that's one place where you could possibly remove that complexity and just keep it simple, right? And the another higher level bullet that I wanted to see if we should consider is to not talk about consolidation at all. Because in my mind, consolidation is this dynamic piece for dynamic energy saving, and we could certainly mention it as one of the things that we do, but to highlight it as one of the key techniques will take up time, and I don't think we're going to get a lot of benefit out of it. I don't know how other people think about that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that I think slide 6 should be focusing on other things, not tiering and consolidation. Mm-hmm.
I mean, tiering is certainly really important, and dynamic tiering is very important, and we need that to meet the performance objectives. At the same time, use a small number of devices, configure a small number of devices. But the consolidation piece, I think, is like a slightly orthogonal optimization for dynamic energy savings. And even if we don't talk about it in the entire presentation, I think we still have all the major points conveyed.
I think for dynamic energy savings, that's the only idea that gives us the dynamic energy savings. So we need that for dynamic energy savings. Yeah, without that, we will not have even dynamic energy savings at all. So I think it's still key, but I don't think it's highest level bullet in the key idea.
Okay,
so the more important thing we want the audience to take away is that we build a CA that is working, we build a DTM that is working, that incorporates a few things. So,
Okay, I agree.
And the other thing is slide 8. That needs to be, that needs to convey, or I was thinking that this could be the place where we motivate the design choices about the existing tiering approaches and how we are doing. The fact that we are extreme granularity, the fact that we are continuous to be runtime dynamic. And not volume level archive like tiering that's going on. So this could be a very good place to kind of highlight why these design choices were made and how they are different from everything else.
Right. I think this slide.
Go ahead, Red.
Right. I think this also can address Ricardo's comment earlier about some formal definitions of extents and epochs. I think we could use this slide to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Dynamic data placement. If you kind of mention. What's happening, we introduce the notion of epoch over here. What do we mean by dynamic? And that kind of can help you introduce the notion of epoch. And you could also draw the contrast out with all the other things that people are thinking about when they're thinking about multi-tier.
Right.
And how we are different. So, yeah, so slides 1 through 8, I understand I'm suggesting quite a few things, but yeah, those need to be much lighter than we have here. So probably they should also, I anticipate they look quite different. And we'll need to iterate them to make sure we get the message. Those are your most important slides. Because that's when you actually have a chance of undivided attention. After that, it's just done. Before they even try to get a little, okay, he's going to conclude soon, so I'm going to look at what he's saying. So, highlighting the contributions, the key ideas very precisely, and setting the stage for the design. after that it becomes the design story, which is a much lighter weight in terms of, yeah, people will not challenge you saying, oh, why did you think sequentiality is important? They will believe you when you say it's because, but these are things people will challenge you and they say, okay, why do you think right now multi-tier is good? Or they'll say, why, there's so many multi-tier systems, how are you? These are the questions that people will ask you if you don't spend the right amount of time.
Right. So one other comment is, I don't know what you folks think, but for me, when you have your major evaluation, right,
mm-hmm.
you talk about the energy evaluation first, and then the performance evaluation. I understand because you're saving the best for the last in some sense, right? Because the performance of EDT is substantially better. It sort of makes sense, but for me, I'm more curious about how the performance looks like for a system like this, where we have configured it to be lower cost and with fewer amount of devices in relation to other configurations which are better, and then talk about the energy saving as a secondary evaluation bullet. But this is just a personal thing, but I don't know what other people think about that. I mean, which one goes first? I mean, you're talking about both of them, so it's not bad either way, but it's just a matter of personal choice, I think.
I agree. I would like the performance up front, making the case that it's equal performance, the equal cost, better performance, the equal performance, lower cost. And getting that point out is the 631, right, introduces that notion. If you immediately apply 33, you would have made a complete point. Either you would have motivated equal better performance, or you would have to equal performance better cost.
Right.
And then the energy discussion can come in. But did I understand you right? Is that what you were suggesting?
Yes, that's what I was suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
And in slide 27, I think you can save quite a bit of time because the details of the specific test bed, right, with so many disks of this type and that and so on, I think you don't have to read everything out.
Yeah.
I think you can just mention,
SAS,
SATA and SSD is based on this configuration and run through that more quickly. So that you can save some time with that.
You can merge maybe 26 and 27, like Raj is saying,
just
be compulsory, everything on this side. This one
and
this one.
Okay. Right.
And we discussed about merging 28 with, and probably
29
should be
before
28. Or
28
will go completely.
So 28 will go completely. That's what I think we got.
Right. And even here, the methodology may be we could take together. So you'd like 30 and 31?
Which was 28 that we were going to take out?
28, the one that has the different systems, that some configuration.
I sort of feel that we should have some discussion about the comparison candidates.
Yeah, but what we were discussing is like make it like a story. Like, okay, first we present one, then the other one, and at that point is where I introduce them, not have them in a slide.
I see.
All of them.
Okay, but you will introduce them
formally
at some point. Okay. I think
when we talk about each of them, we can introduce them, and if the space allows, we can let them remain on the slide as they introduce each other. We'll have to see how the animation will look out, but just drawing a bulleted list and then pulling that information 2 slides later is not going to be useful. People are not going to retain all these acronyms for 3 slides and follow along in 32.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true.
Okay.
It needs to be introduced closer together. That's all is okay. The results are good. Okay. So some are black and white. I'm back at the EDT list.
Which one?
I mean, it's not yellow on site, but just make sure that those actually students.
Bindu, can you please repeat what you just said?
Sorry, what was that?
Can you please repeat what you just said because there was some problem with the connection?
Yeah,
Okay. What I was saying is the black and white lines in slide 32 or 33, we could not tell on Skype whether the lines, it was kind of blurry for us. So we should make sure all the different themes are distinguishable in those lines, right?
Okay.
In black and white, dotted and dashed lines. Thanks
okay.
In a big room for the back of the room. Or maybe things about moving into color or different thicknesses and so forth.
Yeah,
but
probably,
I don't think
yeah,
that's a very clear, but I'm not sure.
The easiest thing to do is to increase the thickness, I think.
Well, probably, yeah.
Or add color.
Color.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Add color.
Yeah, this has the paper version, so I can just add color.
Okay.
Okay, so that's the eval. I'm going to quickly flip through the design. So, slide 10 is good.
That was great, actually.
Yeah, that was a good overview of the whole system.
It went way too fast for me.
Here.
Yeah, this slide went... I mean, this was one of the slides that went too fast for me. And 11 also went too fast for me. I thought these were slides where we should be spending a little bit more time. Do you have a record of how many seconds you spent on this slide?
I don't know.
But yeah, for me it went too fast. But anyway, I mean, I know what's on the slide, but as I was trying to put myself in the shoes of someone who's not seen it before and listen to what you're saying and looking at the slide, and you know, from that perspective it went fast for me.
Okay. So Bindu, you can go ahead.
So, slide 10 is good. Slide 10, yeah, we said. Slide 12 is difficult. I don't think you really want to figure the exponentially weighted loading.
Yeah, that's something I added like 5 minutes before the presentation.
Right, and dedicating a whole, either go through it again, one of those things that you can really go through quickly by giving just a high level, right level of information.
Right.
We talked about 13, we talked about 14.
Right.
The scene is good, the slide needs to be there. I think it'll need more a little bit more explanation. 16 is good, it's good in fact, it's made faster. So okay. Yeah. So slide 20, I was thinking, Jorge, if this can be mirrored to the same animation as in slide 16 and 17. It's saying the same thing in a different way.
20.
So, you see what I think?
As the slide, which one?
As the CA. So I want to reflect the similarity in the algorithms in CA and DDTS. There is a large similarity, right? Especially the way we do tiering. So if you use the same kind of animation and set it up the same way. So here you have utilization, which should be in fact paused probably in slide 16.
Yeah.
And in slide, whatever that is, that when you talk about energy, it should be energy. So we use the same technique, but with different optimization objects.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
You're saying the same thing, but you have a different animation, and
mm-hmm.
that's probably because
yeah.
it's made at different points in time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be consistent, that's right.
That's easier to follow. Talking was good. Also, consciously spent a little bit more time than... You can even kill my data completely and say these are all the standard tricks one would apply to migration based thing.
Which one? This one? 21?
Bindu, you're in which slide?
24.
Okay.
Yeah, you can completely kill that slide and say all this you know, the data movement is happening by, is being done by a migrator, whether it's
okay.
from the costing
yeah.
side or from the tiering and consolidation side. And these are all the standard tricks, right? People have known how to migrate very efficiently, and we have adopted some refer to the paper for details. You don't need a whole
yeah,
slide.
Yeah, okay. So basically, yeah, this one can get
I think
out of.
You can remove 24, and similarly, you can also remove that slide on the data collector.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Okay,
yeah.
So those two I can remove.
Yeah, that's it for now. Okay. Should we quick before we quit the next time? Put a calendar. I'll try to get different set of people.
You mean?
Okay, did you hear back from your student group?
No, but I mean, I can go ahead and book my ticket, but what I was going to ask you is if you want me to do the presentation there, for me it's easier on Tuesday.
Tuesday
evening. Is that okay for you guys, or?
You're talking about the week off fast, right?
The week off fast, yeah. We're going to do another one next week, but you're saying the week off fast?
Okay. Yeah, Tuesday. 15th, right? That will work, yeah.
Yeah, Tuesday 15 on the evening, so I can fly in the morning.
Evening. You don't want to make it too late, because I'm going to send a department in Whitewater. So maybe at least like 2-3. I'm just kind of...
I think 4 p.m. is certainly doable, because I know that there is a flight that goes into San Jose about 1 p.m. or so. 1 or 1:30 p.m.
Non-stop, and we'll come in fairly early into the West Coast.
Right. So the early flight is into San Francisco, which reaches SFO at noon. And then there is another flight that goes into San Jose but stops somewhere along the way.
There's one that goes from LA to LA and then from LA and San Jose.
San Jose.
And that one I can get there, I think, at 12 or 11.
No.
No?
Well, you can, but for that you have to leave at 5 a.m. Or something like that.
No, I think there's one that leaves here at 8. Oh, I can check.
The one that leaves at 8. It's about 8 o'clock. It goes into San Francisco at 11:30 because that's a direct flight.
11:30.
The one that goes into San Jose, that gets into San Jose at about 1:30.
Or 1:30. Okay, so you already did your research.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so probably then I could fly on Monday.
You could do that.
Monday afternoon.
Or if you're flying into San Jose, you could go directly to Almaden from the airport and still get there at about 3:30 or so, or maybe even earlier.
So does that work for you guys?
So you're talking about Tuesday getting here by that flight that gets here. Is that what you're just talking about?
Yeah, Tuesday afternoon. Is it possible, or is it too late?
What is the safest time you can announce the talk? Like 2?
What was the question?
The safest time.
Oh, the safest time I would say is 4 p.m.
4 p.m.
4 p.m. Yeah, a little less safe is 3 p.m. And anything before that time is
So the flight arrives at 1:30, right? So
yeah, it's between 1 and 1:30.
It's like half hour to get there from to the airport. So 2 to make it safe, 3. Yeah.
Right.
3 is doable. 4 is pretty safe.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's say 4 for now. Send out the invite. But Jorge, once you book your flight, I'll send out. If you confirm with me, then I'll send it.
Okay, I'll book the flight.
I have to go right now, Raju, but just to confirm, you're going to pick me up on Friday morning at 9:15?
Yes, I'll pick you up at 9:15 from your hotel lobby.
I'll wear a rose in my lapel.
Sorry?
I'll wear a rose in my lapel so you'll know me.
What? A big rose? Is that what you're saying?
Just ignore me.
And he'll wear a rose on his lapel so that he can identify.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, I don't need that. I should be, unless you're in a disguise, I should be able to recognize you. So. Right, so I'll pick you up from your hotel at 9:15 a.m. And I'll probably send you an email. I'll probably send you an email asking you for a cell phone number if you have one.
I think I have it. I can leave it to you.
Okay.
I'll send it to you, Raju. I know I sent it to the board already, but I'll send it to you as well.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then I'll see you on Friday.
Okay. Okay. So you guys are want to do another round next week?
Yep, that would be good. Yeah.
Okay. So please send me your schedules, and I'll schedule one for next week.
Right. Sounds good. We'll do that. And yeah, if you have slides in the meantime that you want to just iterate, like, you know, just the slides and then all this.
Okay. Sure.
And if you can discuss it, or we can have a meeting just to discuss the slides if you have any questions as to how to go about or what to do.
Okay. Yeah. So probably I'll come up with a new presentation on the weekend and give it to you guys so I can get feedback during the first couple of days and then before I do the second practice talk.
Sounds good. And I'll try to get some unique
Okay.
Alrighty.
Okay.
We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.